I'd like to call to order the House Committee on Judiciary Policy and Finance. Committee Legislative Assistant, would you call the roll, please?
Chairman Smith?
Here.
Vice Chair Szymanski?
Here.
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Representative Anderson? Representative Champion?
Here.
Representative Cornish?
Here.
Representative Grunhagen?
Here.
Representative Hillstrom?
Here.
Representative Creasel?
Present.
Representative Lane is excused. Representative Lesh? Representative Liebling? Representative Mazarol? Representative Moline?
Here.
Representative Schumacher? Representative Vogel?
Present.
Representative Wardlow?
Here.
Chair notes that we do have the presence of a quorum, so we will proceed with the agenda. First item would be consideration of the minutes from March 8, 2011. Is there a motion for approval? Representative Szymanski moves approval of the minutes for March 8, 2011. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes of March 8, 2011 are approved. First bill we will take up will be, and by the way, committee members, we do have space reserved for 4:30 or at the call of the chair if we do not complete this morning's agenda on time this morning. Chair would like to bring the Representative Kiefer forward and her testifiers on House File 532. The chair will move the bill to get it before the committee. It'll be my intent after testimony and question and discussion to lay the bill over for potential movement or inclusion thereafter. Do you have one testifier, Representative?
Thank you, Chair. Yes.
Anyone present in the room wanting to be heard or testify on this bill, for or against, raise your hand, please. Thank you. All right. I kind of assumed that since you're at the table. Representative Kiefer, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Andrea Kiefer. I would like to move House File 532. It is an enhanced penalty for individuals who receive a repeat conviction for fifth-degree criminal sexual conduct from a gross misdemeanor to a felony. This bill is important because this is one of the only criminal sexual conducts that is not enhanced by a repeat conviction right now. And enhancing the penalty could have long-term impacts on preventing future and potentially more serious assaults. This bill has bipartisan support, and I'd like to recognize the other authors, Representatives Cornish, Chair Smith, Representatives Slocum, Hilty, and Gauthier. I also have endorsements from my own Washington County Attorney, Pete Orbit, the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, and the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Mr. Chair, at this time I would like to introduce my testifier, Erin Kuster. She's the Assistant County Attorney for Goodhue County and MnCASA Public Policy Committee co-chair.
Very good. Ms. Kuster, identify yourself and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erin Kuster, and I'm an assistant Goodhue County attorney. Goodhue County is located in southeastern Minnesota with Red Wing as its county seat. And it is a great honor and privilege for me to appear in front of the members this morning in support of House File Bill 532, calling for increased penalties for repeat violations of criminal sexual conduct in the fifth degree. And for some of the familiar faces that I do see on the committee, I do apologize if this sounds familiar, as I did testify in support of this bill last week. I have served as a prosecutor in Goodhue County, specializing in sexual crimes committed against children as well as adults since 1999. And in that job as a sex crimes prosecutor, I am very familiar with the existing criminal sexual conduct statutes, as it is my duty to enforce them and to interpret them every day. And when you look at the wide range of acts that encompass the criminal sexual conduct statutes, criminal sexual conduct in the fifth degree is the least serious, and it is often overlooked. and it's often overlooked because we are always talking about more egregious acts, and the communities throughout the state of Minnesota have often reacted in outrage towards those acts. But it doesn't happen in a vacuum. Criminal sexual conduct in the fifth degree encompasses intentional violations of individuals against them sexually. And sometimes these acts then come into bigger acts, and those are the acts that make the newspaper. The reason why I'm here this morning is to ask you to bring the criminal sexual conduct, the fifth degree statute, in compliance with the other criminal sexual conduct statutes, because this one is one of the existing loopholes that prosecutors in the state of Minnesota have identified. I say that it's a loophole because it is one of the acts that is repeated over and over and over again. In the subcommittee that I serve on, that all the people that are on the committee are existing sex crimes prosecutors. Some of the individuals have had defendants who have violated this law at least 5 and 6 times, but yet the penalty remains the same. It is a gross misdemeanor penalty, and the maximum probationary term is only 2 years. If you were to support this bill, it would increase the maximum probationary period to a 5-year term. What that would mean for prosecutors is we would have the ability to effectively intervene and to possibly prevent more egregious sexual offenses against members in our community. We would have the opportunity for long-term community monitoring, and we'd actually have the opportunity to have these individuals have the ability to successfully complete sex offender treatment. In most communities and those that you represent, sex offender treatment programs cannot be completed in less than 3 or 4 years. So if you only have a 2-year probationary term period, you're effectively ordering a defendant who has violated against someone sexually to be treated when you know that they cannot complete that treatment. And what happens when they don't complete the treatment? Again and again, we see violations of individuals within our communities. And these aren't violations that are offensive. These are intentional sexual violations that violate their core. I ask you to support this bill so that you can help prosecutors like me throughout the state of Minnesota close this existing loophole. Help us to work together in sexual violence, not only in the community that I live and work in, but the communities that you represent and that you live and work in as well. Again, it is a great honor to appear in front of you this morning, and I would be more than willing to answer any questions that any of you have regarding this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Keister. Last call for anyone in the audience, members of the public that wants to be heard in testimony on this bill, come forward. Seeing none, the public testimony is now closed, and we return it to the table for discussion or questions from the committee. I see nobody. Yes, Representative Champion.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. One question for the author. I noticed that we didn't have any information around fiscal impact, so do you know if this bill will have any fiscal impact?
We do have, the Chair.
Representative Keefe.
Representative Champion, we do have a fiscal note in the works. It is not finalized. They're estimating it will be about 5 beds.
Representative Champion, there is a preliminary fiscal note, and the impact would be on corrections or public safety, which is where that will go. But it's going to be laid over today for that final note. Any other questions? Any discussion? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Kiefer. The chair will lay the bill over.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks.
Thank you, members of the committee.
All right, Representative Grunhagen, House File 469, if you'd come to the table with your witnesses. It'd be the chair's intention to send this bill to civil law. And do you have a motion along those lines?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'd like to move House File 469 to recommend it to pass and re-refer to civil law.
Thank you. Before you proceed, I see one testifier at the table, presumably for the bill. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to be heard on this bill other than whoever is at the table at this time? Raise your hand. I see no hands raised. Representative Grunhagen, present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 469 proposes to remove a barrier for victims of sexual assault who are seeking the protection of an HRO or being a harassment restraining order. Current statute is silent in giving direction to the courts about the venue or filing an HRO. This has resulted in inconsistent handling of these requests in different counties, particularly in Greater Minnesota. This problem was brought to my attention by sexual assault victim service providers. Advocates who were working with victims found they were appearing in one county to help their client file an HRO petition, only to be told they would have to go to another county to seek court protection. As we all know, the trauma and complex issues raised by a sexual assault sometimes makes it hard for victims to step forward, whether it is to report the incident, seek care, support and protection, or to prosecute. Even the smallest barriers can become paralyzing. This bill seeks to relieve one of those small administrative barriers that can cause a victim of sexual violence to stop pursuing a path towards safety and recovery. This bill makes the process for filing an HRO essentially the same as filing for an order of protection. Section 1 of the bill makes it clear that an HRO petitioner will be able to file for relief in the county of residence of either party or in the county where the harassment occurred, and there is no residency requirement. Section 2 allows the courts, as it is the current practices with restraining orders, to waive petitioner filing fees. A fiscal note has been requested. It's included in your jacket, and so just you can review that. We will share the we're sharing this with the committee so they can see what the fiscal impact is, which it's negligible or none at this time. I'd also like to acknowledge my co-authors, Representative Cornish, Representative Smith, Representative Mullery, and also Representative Johnson. This bill has been endorsed by the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women, and the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. I also want to thank at this time Mr. Bob Tracy, who's sitting in the audience here. Bob, there he is, he's hiding behind an attorney. for his dedicated work on this bill. At this time, I'd also like to introduce my testifier, Caroline Palmer. She's an attorney with the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Thank you.
Ms. Palmer, identify yourself and then proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, and members of the committee. My name is Caroline Palmer. I'm the staff attorney of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Just to give you a little bit of information about MnCASA, we're a nonprofit organization incorporated in 1981. We represent over 70 member programs across the state who assist victims of sexual assault. I am very pleased to address the committee in support of House File 469. As members of this committee are well aware, sexual violence is a significant problem in Minnesota. According to the Minnesota Department of Health report on the cost of sexual violence, in 2005, more than 61,000 Minnesota residents were sexually assaulted. Some victims of sexual assault seek civil protective orders from the courts in order to ensure that the perpetrator is barred from contacting the victim. Criminal penalties apply when such a court order is violated. One sort of protective order victims seek is an HRO, or a harassment restraining order. Before I go into the details of the bill, I just would like to talk briefly, if I may, about protective orders. Today I'm going to discuss orders that are available from a civil court, and they're based upon a petitioner's request and a judge's determination of whether the request meets the statutory requirements. As you know, a criminal court can also issue a no-contact order on its own initiative. Today's bill only addresses a particular type of protective order that is available through a civil court process. Minnesota statute defines harassment as a single incident of physical or sexual assault or repeated incidents of intrusive or unwanted acts, words, or gestures that have a substantial adverse effect or are intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of another, regardless of the relationship between the actor and the intended target. And those last words are particularly critical here. The nature of the relationship between the parties is an important distinction between an HRO and an order for protection, or an OFP. So just to keep that in mind as we're going through this testimony. OFPs apply when domestic abuse has occurred and the relationship between the parties is defined as either familial, intimate, or as household members. If a perpetrator of sexual assault is not related to the victim, does not live with the victim, and is either unknown or an acquaintance of the victim, then an OFP would not apply. It wouldn't be an available option to the sexual assault victim, but an HRO possibly would. Now to the specific problem addressed by the bill. At present, the statute does not state where a petitioner for an HRO can file for relief. This lack of statutory guidance has led to inconsistent interpretation of the law statewide, and this is translated into confusion for petitioners and also for court staff. So that creates delays in action and also compromised safety for victims of physical or sexual assault or stalking. And if they're looking for protection, this can cause a real barrier. Some, including chief judges of district courts, acting in lieu of clear statutory direction, have interpreted the omission to indicate that the HRO should be filed in a manner similar to civil court filings. So that means that the petition can be filed only in a county where one of the respondents resides or where the cause of action occurred. Some courts and attorneys have interpreted the omission to mean that the HRO petition can be filed in the same manner as an OFP. Under the OFP statute, a petition can be filed in the county of residence of either party or in the county in which the domestic abuse occurred, and there are no residency requirements that apply to an OFP petition. Advocates and attorneys who work with victims seeking HROs will tell you that the issue of inconsistent interpretation is a common problem. Here's just one example of why we're seeking the statutory clarification. A couple of years ago, an advocate from one of MNCASA's member programs in southern Minnesota reported that a victim of sexual assault went to file for an HRO in the county where she lived. The court clerk instructed the petitioner to file instead where the county where the incident occurred. It was the county next door. When the petitioner went to that particular county to make the filing, she actually encountered the perpetrator again. He harassed her, and as you can imagine, that was a traumatic experience. While I realize what happened to this particular victim may be unusual and that she encountered the perpetrator while attempting to file her HRO petition, it's important to point out that she would not have had this unwanted interaction at all, most likely, if she could have filed for an HRO in her home county or if she was filing for an OFP where she would have that option. Also, this victim had to travel a significant distance from her home in order to file for the HRO. This is not as much of an issue for victims living in the Twin Cities, but can prove to be a significant barrier for victims living in greater Minnesota. House File 469 aligns the statutory directive for filing HRO petitions with the existing language for OFP filings. If this bill is enacted into law, an HRO petitioner will be able to file for relief in the county of residence of either party or in the county where the harassment occurred, and there will be no residency requirements. With this change, HRO petitioners will get the clear guidance they deserve about where to file for an order that will protect their safety. House File 469 also updates the HRO statute fee waiver section. The HRO statute currently waives filing fees for an HRO petitioner in certain circumstances, specifically when there's an allegation of stalking or criminal sexual conduct. Federal law requires that a state, in order to be eligible for grants to combat violence crimes against women, must certify that its laws do not require a victim of sexual assault, stalking, or domestic violence to bear the cost of filing for a protection order. Minnesota complies with federal requirements in its HRO statute. However, last year there were changes to the stalking law under Minnesota Statute Section 609-749. The additional sections from the stalking statute added to the fee waiver in the HRO statute reflect the recent changes made to the stalking statute. So we're just bringing things up to speed with changes from last year. There are no other new fee waiver categories created in House File 469. So in sum, MNCASA works to ensure that victims and survivors of sexual assault have the best possible access to the judicial system and the protections it offers. House File 469 will help ensure that the process of obtaining an HRO is as straightforward as possible for petitioners seeking protection. This change will also benefit judicial system staff. Clear statutory direction about filing procedures increases efficiency in the court process. So I would really like to thank Representative Brunhagen for bringing this bill forward, and I will also thank the committee for the opportunity to make this statement in support of the bill. And I can answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions from the committee at this point? Last call for anyone in the audience wishing to be heard on this bill. Raise your hand. I see no one, so the public testimony is now closed. Any questions or any discussion of this bill? Representative Greenhagen, why don't you renew your motion?
I just want to thank you and the representatives for being so pleasant about this bill. I'd like to renew my motion on House File 469 and recommend a yes vote and refer to the Civil Law Committee. Thank you.
That's the motion before the committee. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Cornish will call you next. House File 738. Representative Cornish, how many testifiers do you have?
One, I believe, and one in the queue for backup.
All right. Let's just determine if there's anyone else present besides the lady at the table and the author. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to be heard on this bill in testimony? Raise your hand. I see no one. Representative Cornish, do you have an amendment on your bill? First, move the bill.
Yes, I'd like to move House File 738 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Public Safety Policy and Finance Committee.
Very good. Do you have an author's amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I've authored Amendment A1 should be in the packet. I'd like to move that also.
All right. To get the bill in the shape that you want, let's deal with that amendment. Any discussion on that motion on the amendment? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill as amended is before us. Go ahead.
Representative, Mr. Chair and members, why don't I explain the amendment first? Basically, what the amendment does is it makes some technical changes, and then on page 2, there was some controversial language that it removes. And so it makes it a little bit different from the summary. In the summary, it talks about a location around the residence, but that's being stricken on page 2, lines 29 through 32. Mr. Chair and members, what House File 738 does is it, I'll skip some of my intro because the testifiers in front of us described the difference in the orders and also the HRO, which this House File amends or changes the law concerning that. What this basically does, House File 738, is a violation of a harassment or restraining order, an HRO. A person who commits a violation in two or more counties can be prosecuted in any county in which one of the acts was committed. That's the first thing it does. The second thing that House File 738 does is where the call is made or received, either it can be prosecuted at the place where the call is made or at the place the call is received, especially in the case of wireless electronic communication made through available technologies or where the actor or victim resides or in the jurisdiction of the victim's designated address if the victim participates in the address confidentiality program. And that would include phone calls, text messages, and emails. It's important to tighten this, the HRO up, and my witness is going to explain the reason for this. Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd identify yourself and then proceed.
Thank you. My name is Raina Fuller, and I'm a managing partner and a supervising attorney at the Battered Women's Legal Advocacy Project. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, and the committee. BWLEP is a nonprofit organization where we provide legal advice and technical assistance to domestic violence victims, advocates, and attorneys across the state of Minnesota. I am pleased to address the committee about House File 738, a bill that clarifies which county a violation of a harassment restraining order can be prosecuted. I also have an informational sheet developed by the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women for the committee members if they're interested. I believe that this committee has already heard excellent testimony and knowledgeable testimony about what harassment restraining orders are and the importance of them to victims of sexual assault, stalking, and domestic violence. So I will not repeat that testimony. This bill, House File 738, proposes two changes regarding where violations of harassment restraining orders may be prosecuted. These changes are the same modifications that were made to the stalking statute, Minnesota Statute 609.749, last year. In regards to the modification, if a respondent commits several acts that are violations of a protective order in multiple counties, under our current statute, the respondent would have to be prosecuted in each county for the violation that occurred in each county. For example, if a petitioner lives in Rice County and the respondent goes and knocks on her door and has contact with her at her home, and the petitioner works in Steele County and the respondent calls her at work, the violation of the harassment restraining order of going to the petitioner's house would have to be prosecuted in Rice County, and then Steele County would have to prosecute the violation of the respondent calling the petitioner at work. This bill would instead allow any one of the involved counties, either Rice or Steele, to prosecute both of those violations at one time. The second proposed change is simply needed to keep up with our changing technology to address violations of harassment restraining orders through communications such as phone calls, text messages, emails, and other electronic communication. Under the Minnesota Constitution, criminal cases are to be venued where the crime occurred. However, in the case of text messages or emails or other electronic communication, the question of when does the crime occur and in what county raises venue questions. Does the crime occur when the respondent sends the text message, or does the crime occur when the victim reads the text message? Also, determining exactly which county the respondent was in at the time the text message was sent can be very difficult. Over the years, I have spoken to many advocates and prosecutors across the state about these very issues, and we have tried to come up with creative and alternative ways to address them, and with varying success. The purpose of this bill is to answer these questions and to clarify that if offense occurs by phone, it can be charged either where the communication originated or where it was received. If the violation occurs by other electronic means like text message or Facebook, then the offense can be charged either where the offender lives or where the victim lives. Sometimes I hear that restraining orders are just a piece of paper. However, for thousands of victims of sexual assault, stalking, and domestic violence, they are a part of their safety net. However, if HRO violations cannot be prosecuted because the court is unable to determine which county has venue, these orders are less able to provide safety to victims, and we have only encouraged abusers to use text messaging instead of direct contact to violate the order. These two changes in statute will give prosecutors the tools they need to hold respondents who violate harassment restraining orders responsible and reduce the need for multiple counties to have to prosecute multiple violations. Thank you very much for your time, and I am available for questions.
Any questions from the committee? Well, there's no other testifiers, so Chair closes public testimony, returns the bill to the table for discussion. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill sounds very reasonable. However, I have a question about line 1.10. Representative Cornish orders the respondent to have no contact with another person instead of that person. Could you explain what that's doing?
Sorry, I didn't hear what line
1.10.
Ma'am, have a seat, give us your name, and then go to the question.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Liz Richards. I'm with the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women. The term another person, that was the original language that was drafted in the bill. I think, I know that there's some questions that have come up because I think people have been looking at the bill. This is not new language being put in. The way in which the courts have been interpreting this since the statute has been in place has been essentially, it says another person, but I think that really what they're talking about is the respondent. That's how the court has consistently interpreted that.
Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, you know, if that's what's intended, why don't we say that? Otherwise we're just opening up a bunch of new, perhaps, you know, inconsistent interpretations. Is there any reason why we couldn't just say that?
Ms. Palmer.
Chair, I don't think there's any problem with that. I don't know that language has ever caused any problem. We're not opposed if somebody wants to amend that language at this point.
Anything else?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess I would just say to Representative Cornish that, you know, I guess I would just, I'm not going to make a motion to amend your bill here, but I would just suggest that perhaps you'd want to do that, talk to your folks about doing that. I just think the more we can be clear, and use language that really says what we mean it to say, the better off we'll be. So thank you.
Any other question or discussion? I think I called you by the wrong name. I apologize, Ms. Richards. Excuse me. All right, Representative Cornish, want to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd renew my motion. House File 738 be recommended to pass and referred to the Public Safety Policy Finance Committee.
On that motion, any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Cornish. Representative Szymanski, I think we'll go to you next. On House File 506. Representative Szymanski, good morning. Would you proceed with a motion as to where you want this bill re-referred when it passes, and then it will be my intent to lay the bill over.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House File Number 506 be laid over for possible consideration. Mr. Chairman, I neglected to determine which committee this should go to.
Representative Szymanski, let's have you do the chair accepts a motion on your behalf to that 506 be recommended to pass, be referred, re-referred to Ways and Means would be the proper motion, but then the chair will lay it over before we vote on that motion. I see by the agenda you have two testifiers, Mr. Levinson and Mr. Jones, is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to be heard on this bill? Raise your hand now. I see no one. So, Representative Szymanski, go right ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In order to get the bill in the proper form, I would move the DE-2 amendment.
DE-2 amendment has been moved by Representative Szymanski to get the bill in the shape the author wants. Is there discussion? If not, those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. All right. The bill, as amended, is before us. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File Number 506 was presented last week in the Public Safety Policy and Finance Committee. The original version included the terms mounted posse or mounted patrol or unmounted posse organization, which caused some concern to the previous committee. So with the help of House Research, Mr. Diebel was able to assist us in drafting this DE-2 amendment. And we've kind of cleaned up the language at the request of the Public Safety Committee, and so we have DE-2 here. At this time, I would like to introduce Mr. Ken Levinson to take us through the DE-2 amendment and the rationale for this bill.
Very good. Identify yourself for the record and then go ahead.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ken Levinson. I'm a member of the Carver County Mounted Posse, Sheriff's Office Mounted Posse. With me today is Mr. Chuck Jones, who is a member of the McLeod County Mounted Posse. We are here as part and representing a group of an ad hoc group of members who helped draft this bill initially, all of whom are members of County Sheriff's Office Mounted Posse or Mounted Patrols, and those organizations who are all in support of this bill and would ask its passage are Carver County Sheriff's Office Mounted Posse, the McLeod County Sheriff's Office Mounted Posse, Washington County Sheriff's Office Mounted Patrol, the Dakota County Sheriff's Office Mounted Patrol, Three Rivers Park Police, and Search, Rescue, and Recovery Resources of Minnesota, also known as SARMA, which is an organization that organizes and assists law enforcement in searches for missing persons. I would like, with the chair's permission, to have Mr. Jones go through the incident last summer that triggered the issues to which this bill is addressed.
Very good. Mr. Jones, identify yourself for the record, and then please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Chuck Jones, and I'm a member of the McLeod County Sheriff's Mounted Posse. And I'll just refer my notes. The McLeod County Sheriff's Mounted Posse had an incident at a tractor show in the summer, in July of 2010, in which a person in a car struck one of our posse horses. After being given a directive to move by a uniformed mounted posse member, the person was directed to move to a proper parking location. The person drove in such a manner as to force one of the mounted posse members to take evasive action on her horse to avoid being struck. The person's car actually did strike another member's posse horse. The incident brought to light the question of what charges could be brought against that driver, given the language in the current assaulting or harming a police force statute, which is 609.95597. The definition of police force in that statute seems to require that the horse is used or ridden by a peace officer. In the outstate Minnesota area, the majority, if not all, of sheriff's mounted posses or mounted patrols or other similar organizations are staffed primarily by voluntary personnel. Cloud County Attorney's Office interpretation of 609.597 was that a horse ridden by a non-licensed peace officer was not a police horse, therefore the statute did not apply. Thank you.
We'll go to questions. Mr. Jones, I have one question. I see that. What happened to the horse that was struck?
Fortunately, the impact was very light. The rider of that horse, she was able to turn her horse in an evasive move after the bumper came in contact with her horse's leg. She was able to get out of the path of the car. But an additional note, fortunately, this person was not driving in an extremely aggressive way, which in the interpretation of our county attorney's office would have probably made it fairly easy to look at second degree assault. However, in this case, the person was moving at a very slow rate of speed, but was basically passively aggressive to the uniform mounted members.
Very good. We have Representatives Creasel and Johnson. Representative Creasel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So was the act intentional, in your opinion, to hit the horse?
Mr. Jones.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, we heard this in public safety, and we spent a fair amount of time on it. I think the bill that we have before us is much more understandable and clean than what we heard. Thank you, Shemansky, Representative Shemansky, for doing that. The only thing that stands out to me right now, I guess, is fiscal note. Is there any fiscal note?
Representative Shemansky, on that point.
Mr. Chair, there was a fiscal note done for the original draft of the bill. There is a follow-up fiscal note being prepared for the DE2 amendment.
That's the reason, Representative Johnson, that we're hearing a bill today to not delay it, because I think it's a good bill. And its route will be to Ways and Means, because there probably will be a fiscal note, and we don't have that, and that's why we're going to lay it over.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Shemansky, I'm not in the other public safety committee, so this is my first time hearing the bill. And, you know, I just want to ask the same question that I ask on a lot of these bills, which is what public safety bang for the buck do we really get here? Because, again, does somebody who's in this situation know that there's what the penalty is going to be? I mean, that's just hard for me to believe that this will actually prevent any assaults on horses that are doing these duties. So could you address that? How does this really fix a problem?
Representative Shemansky.
Mr. Chair, if I may ask Mr. Levinson to further
absolutely
expound on that answer.
Mr. Levinson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the purpose of this bill is to clarify that mounted patrol or mounted posse members or other reserve officers who are in the performance of their official duties are entitled to the same respect and protection under the law in terms of hostile activities to them that are currently enjoyed by the more narrow category of peace officers. I don't know whether it will actually prevent offenses. These events have been pretty rare, in fact, because most of the public, when they see us in uniform doing our official duties at the behest of our law enforcement or sheriff's office, obey without question. We are not licensed peace officers. We don't carry weapons. We're not allowed to, and nor do we have entitlement to enforce the general laws of the state. But what we're asking for is this interpretive gap that apparently existed without our knowledge to be filled so that we are treated, all of us, all of those who are defined as peace officers, reserve officers, are provided the same protections.
Anything further, Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I get what you're saying. You know, it's kind of an after the fact. You feel you're not valued as highly even though you're there doing, putting yourself in harm's way, essentially. And I get that. And, you know, I'll vote for this bill. But I just, it's kind of a general point, you know, because we're in the fiscal situation that we're in, and every time we increase a penalty, it does put additional burdens on our system, which right now is very overloaded. And one of the problems with the criminal justice system is if you can't actually process the cases in a timely way, you're not getting very much safety for the money. I mean, the whole system, there's an ecosystem, we're now using that word for our criminal justice system, and when we load up one end and we don't fix the other end, we're not increasing public safety overall. And so, you know, I have nothing against this particular bill and what you're trying to do here. It's more the general principle that we have to recognize that people, if somebody's determined to do this kind of act, they're not thinking about what the penalty is going to be, whether it's going to be a misdemeanor or gross or what. If they're intent on doing something, or if in a thoughtless moment they do something to, you know, be passive aggressive or whatever. And so, you know, I would submit that we're not increasing anybody's safety by doing this. We're just, you know, doing something that makes us all feel good because we want to honor your service, but we're not really getting any additional public safety for our efforts here.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've prosecuted a few of these assaults on police horse during the recent RNC demonstrations, and I can tell you that, yeah, it would be problematic if I found out there was a loophole through which people walk. Now, maybe I missed this during the part of your testimony, but what was the existing option if you didn't have this provision? What did the people in the situation that you, the individual in the situation you got cited, or you stated, what was that person cited for?
Mr. Levinson.
Because the horse in question is being ridden by a mounted posse member, a volunteer, not a licensed peace officer, the county attorney in McLeod opted to charge both cruelty to animals and disorderly conduct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And that would certainly, Mr. Chair, members, frustrate me as well. It always does when someone gets through with a loophole. I will say this, though. I agree with the Representative Liebling. Every time we do this, it adds additional burdens, even if we're talking about a gross misdemeanor. A lot of times around here, people make a gross misdemeanor, and that does have impacts in a prosecutor's office doing a full-bore complaint and whatnot. So regardless, I do think it's a good idea, and I agree with Representative Liebling. I hope everyone here realizes, though, that it costs money to do this, and that means property taxes or income taxes or whatever we're willing to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good, Representative Lesh. Anyone else on the committee? Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question for the testifier, because I don't know a whole lot about mounted officers. I hear you using the term posse, and I understand that to be a volunteer. But would you be so kind as to enlighten me as to the training that a posse member receives in order to make sure that the posse member has the ability and the capacity to really be a great writer and sometimes a defensive writer?
Mr. Levinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Champion. The posse members and the names of the official organizations by the various state sheriff's offices vary. So it's mounted patrol, mounted posse, special deputies. There's an array of names for these groups. These groups are, first of all, private volunteers. We supply our own horses, our own tack and saddles. These are personal horses, not county or state-owned horses. we are trained. We first go through a process of application to the sheriff's office to become members of these mounted organizations, including background investigations, fingerprints, psychological testing, interviews, and a variety of assessment by the sitting members of the organization to test their riding skills and competence before they even get into the posse or mounted patrol. Once in, every one of the mounted patrols has an annual and recurring training program that we go through. We call it sensory training, and it's designed to both train and test the horse and rider combination, and these are specific one-on-one combinations. When we get qualified, it's for a specific horse and rider pair, not a generic authorization. And this involves a variety of different stimuli, sounds, lights, noise, gunshots, fire training, crowd control, protesters, almost anything you can think of, water obstacles, things like that. Some of us, I was in the group that was being trained to do the Republican National Convention security, and then there was a difference in assignment and insurance issues, and we never actually did it. But all of the issues that Representative was talking about in terms of threats to and attacks on the horses that were there were part of the training that we were going through to prepare us for that sort of situation. Fortunately, we don't have very many incidents of the kind that occurred in McLeod County. Because, as I said before, the public does treat us with respect. We are in uniform, a specific uniform, we're identifiable. We carry identification, and we are in specific areas of patrol or assignment. So that it's pretty obvious who we are and what we're doing at the time. But it is a broad-based and recurring training. We never really stop training.
Anything further? Any other questions or discussion? All right, Representative Shemansky, I want to thank the two testifiers, Mr. Jones, Mr. Levinson, and Representative Shemansky. Chair lays the bill over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, committee, there's a couple other bills on our agenda, and the chair brings back House File 439 before the committee and moves House File 439 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Next bill is House File 660. Author is Representative McDonald. I'd like to bring it back as amended before the committee and move that House File 660 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance Committee. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails and the bill is passed. All right. Fellow committee members, you've saved yourself an afternoon meeting. Thank you for your attendance, cooperation, and seeing no other business, this committee meeting is adjourned.